from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in December of 2013, 13 months ago, when ACT Rochester and the Community Foundation released a report on poverty. The statistics then were grim. Rochester among the worst cities in the country when it came to poverty, and perhaps not a surprise, but a way to focus on just how severe this problem had become. Well, the hope was that things would improve, and maybe the next report would show some progress, reasons for hope. But last week, ACT Rochester and the Community Foundation used new census data to update the poverty report. And it turns out the picture is even more grim than we first thought. Consider the reality in Rochester. The city's rising poverty rate now stands at 32.9%. The childhood poverty rate is now just over 50%. Among cities of the same size, Rochester is the only one in which half the children live in poverty. And nearly half the people living in poverty are living in what is defined as extreme poverty. So what next? How do we finally turn those numbers around? What else can we learn from this report? We want your feedback on the issue of poverty this hour. Call the program, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. My guests for the hour are Ed Doherty, the author of this report. He spent more than three decades in city government. He's on the board of the Children's Agenda. And again, the author of both reports, I think December 2013 and this one, right, Ed?
Right.
Great to have you here. Thank you for being here, Ed. Ann Johnson's here. She's the director of ACT Rochester. Ann, nice to see you.
Good to be here today.
Ed, I look at these numbers, and it is a grim picture, to say the least. But give us a sense again where the data is coming from, first and foremost.
Well, thanks, Evan. This is brand new data. It's U.S. Census data. They do regular surveys, and they put together 5-year averages, as well as 3-year averages and 1-year data. And the 5-year averages are the data that we like to look at because they're considered the most reliable. So in December of 2014, a month ago, the Census Bureau released its latest 5-year data, and that's the data that we used to compile this report. What we did with this report was, first of all, to update some of the basic data from the report of a year ago, but also to do some deeper benchmarking looking at cities our size. And so there's a large number of tables that look at how Rochester stacks up on a variety of different criteria against the cities that are comparable size in the United States.
And we're going to get there in a little bit more detail, but the short answer is not good, unfortunately.
Well, unfortunately, it's not. You know, I've been talking about this report for the past year, doing presentations around the community, and sometimes I feel like I'm the angel of doom when I talk about it. But I think the intent in getting to people to talk about objective data is not to hang our heads in gloom, but to realize that this is a problem that needs to be addressed. It needs to be addressed specifically in terms of poverty and the concentration of poverty, and one that we as a community ought to be facing head on.
And I look at this report, and it is discouraging. How do you feel?
Well, the information and the data is discouraging, and one of the things ACT Rochester is a neutral data provider, so it is what it is. But our mission at ACT Rochester is to change the culture of how we solve these big problems by using data. So without having this information, we can't make the right decisions and hold ourselves accountable to move forward. And the discussion in our community since December of 2012 or 2013, is huge. So people are aware. We're moving into the understanding stage. So I think you've got to look at the goodness of the fact that people are paying attention and wanting, in many cases, to help, even though the information is not moving in the right direction.
Well, and again, the work that's gone into this report, and certainly Ed's work in writing this report, gives us such important nuts and bolts to understand the facts. But as you say, doing something is understanding the facts is different than doing something, and it's a complex issue. I mean, there are not easy answers. But give me a sense, first of all, what's a possible step out of this that you're starting to see happen, especially, as you say, in the last 13 months? Mm-hmm. What are you seeing that is starting to unfold?
Well, I'm seeing that people are wanting to provide suggestions of things that can be helpful in building relationships. So for instance, we are hosting the foundation, Rochester Area Community Foundation is hosting Dialogues Without Borders in suburbs, because people in the suburbs have said this isn't just a city problem and we'd like to be involved, but we don't know how to be. So we've had four different meetings in people's homes, and out of one of them is a suggestion of a student senate. Two youth from every high school, whether they're private, charter, or public, throughout Monroe County would get together and look at the economic issues, but also build relationships across the county that haven't been built before that could really be helpful long term. So again, that's a building relationship step versus a direct impact on poverty.
And so just thinking, kind of thinking ahead here, you build the student senate, you've got kids from Pittsford, Churchville, Chilai, Wheatland, Chilai, Kendall, wherever they are, and they're looking at the city and they're looking across their community in ways that without that student senate, you know, I mean, it's easy for all of us to get caught up in our own day-to-days, but that's something that seems to separate us, I would think.
Absolutely. And the students then are going to, many of them, go off to college and learn other things, and many will come home and think of the relationships as they continue progressing that will have been established that we don't necessarily have today, or that they're not really positive relationships.
Ed, what do you make of that idea?
Well, I think that's a terrific idea. There's a lot of good ideas coming out. And one thing that has been most satisfying since the report has come out is the interest. There's a lot of interest, both in terms of the leadership in the community as well as rank-and-file citizens. I've been asked to make over 40 presentations. I was amazed to find that we have places where there are people taking courses on the subject of poverty to learn more. We have a lot of interfaith groups that are focused on it, both in the city and in the suburbs. There's a very strong interest in the community for us to address this issue. We have a tendency, I think, sometimes to fear the solutions, and so therefore we kind of jump to it and say, wow, that would never fly, that would never fly. And I think that what we need to do to change the tenor of the conversation is to engage people in the conversation before we throw out clear solutions. Get people to understand, what the magnitude of the problem is. Get a shared understanding of the problem, and then start talking about solutions. This is too good of a community to not think that we can't find some solutions to these problems. But these numbers are startling, and Rochester does need to address this.
I want to get to the phones, and it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. And as we go throughout this hour, we'll take the opportunity to talk about individual issues, you know, whether it's female heads of household, whether it's kids in poverty, et cetera. But Ed and Ann, where can they go to see the report for themselves?
The report is on actrochester.org, and they can just click on the visual and be able to access the report.
And Val and Mike, I would just tell you that once again, I've got a little bit of trouble seeing who's on the board for us. So if you can let me know in my ear who's on the board, and I can know who's on the phone lines, so we can open up the conversation for calls today here on Connection. So it's 844-295-TALK, and Ed, real briefly, the definition of extreme poverty, because again, 32.9% in Rochester in poverty, but about half of those folks are in extreme poverty.
That's correct. The definition of poverty is people living below the federal poverty level, so it does not account for a lot of people who are economically stressed. And then extreme poverty is those who are living below half of the poverty level. And Rochester has the highest percentage of such people among cities our size.
And In various conversations over the last year on this program, I think it's been stressed, and understandably so, that sometimes we say the word poverty as if it means the same thing for everybody.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't. But this report says to me that when we talk about poverty in Rochester, when you see extreme poverty, it's hitting people. Poverty is hitting anybody hard, but it really hits people hard here, Ed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. There's a lot of different ways of defining poverty. And the purpose of the analytical work that we're doing is to provide good, solid comparative data so that we know where we stand. So if you don't like the definitions of poverty, at least realize that we use the same ones when looking at every city.
Yeah.
So that's why we can say Rochester has the highest concentration of people living below half the poverty level of any city our size.
And I have to imagine that there is some idea that if you're living in poverty, the effort to get out of poverty, we know it's difficult, but we also probably know that extreme poverty presents a much higher challenge, I would think, of extricating yourself.
I think it's daunting. And just to put in perspective for your listeners, the federal poverty rate for a family of four is $23,000. So half of that is 11. And if you look at the financial self-sufficiency index for a family of four, it's $58,000. So it is absolutely huge.
All right, let me take our first call. And again, we're talking to Ed Doherty and Ann Johnson this hour, talking about the new report, Benchmarking Rochester's Poverty. This is Jane in Rochester. Go ahead, Jane.
Excuse me. Yes, I think one of the major problems is that we have the haves making the decisions about poverty, and they don't know very much about the have-nots. I just hear so much ignorance. We just got over, not that long ago, a fight over daycare subsidies. We're going to have more cuts in Medicaid. I know that for a fact. The rents are being raised. In New York State, Cuomo's talking about doing away with rent control. And in this city, I don't understand, with all this poverty, the indifference. Why are the realtors starting in the most affluent neighborhoods? I know Park Avenue is not that affluent, but it's a very much loved neighborhood, to renovate and raise prices. That used to be a fairly cheap place to rent for students, and we're building all these new apartments, and the rents are really up there and all over the city, because I've been looking. They've jumped not $25 or $75, but $200 or more per apartment plus utilities. So those are some of the reasons that are going on. It's the judgments and the behaviors of some of the haves who seem to be ignoring the poverty and saying, we'll do that later. Well, sometimes people don't have later. It needs to be done, changed today. Thank you.
Thanks, Jen.
I'd just like to comment on part of what the caller was talking about. In our report, we focus on poverty and the concentration of poverty as two clearly interrelated but separate issues. And in reality, if you look at poverty in metropolitan Rochester, it's about equal to the national average. We are not extraordinary as a metropolitan area. Where we are extraordinary, where we are really exceptional, is the degree to which poverty is concentrated and the effects that that have. So the caller is right. There certainly are wonderful parts of the city. I understand the concern that some of those become economically out of reach for some people. And we do see that happening at the same time as we see areas in the city that are dealing with absolute abject poverty. So we need to look at this issue not just in terms of the poor and in terms of what we do to help people in poverty, but how we arrange ourselves as a community, because it has real effects. The biggest single effect is what happens to city schools. We have possibly the most segregated, the poorest school district, certainly in New York State, and maybe in the nation. It is that severe. Over 80% of the students in Rochester over 75% of the students in Rochester are in classrooms with 80% or more poverty. That is unheard of.
Well, and when you talk about the way we arrange ourselves as a community, you're talking about concentration of poverty, essentially the way the community is segregated socioeconomically. I mean, and how do you start to fix that?
It's where people live and how they engage with each other. And we're segregated by economics and we're segregated by race.
And we hear people all the time say, I appreciate the problem, but you can't tell me where to live, you know, and I'm, right.
Oh, but you can tell people where to live. We tell the poor people where to live. See, that's the problem with that argument. It's not a naturally existing reality. We have made sure that rental housing for the poor is concentrated. We have precluded it from existing in places where people would like it to exist. So we don't have a naturally occurring market reality. We have a reality that has resulted from decades and decades of restricting the places where we will permit the poor to live. Now, that's not unusual to Rochester, but it's more extreme here than it is in other communities. And that's one of the primary reasons that our numbers are so exceptional.
You've touched on schools, and a caller wanted to know, Luann called the program and wants to know, if the guests on this program have an opinion on how the information on poverty in the city relates to school reform efforts. Any comments on school reform in the city in general?
I've made some provocative statements when I've made presentations that, we should expect fairly limited results from our current reform efforts. We are not getting poor results given the poverty level. We're getting poor results when we choose to compare apples to oranges.
Howard Mafucci on this program on Friday said essentially the same. He's a retired superintendent in East Rochester, and he said reform may be well-intentioned, but whenever you have a high concentration of poverty, even the best reform isn't going to move the needle that much. And you're saying essentially the same thing.
Absolutely. And I've done some research that in Rochester area, in the Monroe County area, and even among the suburban school districts, even leaving the city out of the discussion, even among the suburban school districts, we have fairly small variations in poverty. They're nearly perfectly correlated with variations in academic outcomes. So to ignore the issue of poverty is really, it's going to undermine all of the efforts that we're making to bring this community back.
There is an initiative that has been looking at great schools for all, and they went down to Raleigh, North Carolina, and looked at regional schools. They are right now looking for people to participate in, I believe it's 5 subgroups that will look broadly and strategically at options that we may be able and willing to make in Rochester that would probably be in between where Ed's at, where we are today doing typical change versus totally changing the system.
Well, and again, for our listeners who might recall a conversation on this program about that, it was in the mid-1970s that Wake County, North Carolina, decided to go with a countywide school district there, Raleigh being the metro center. Mm-hmm. Very different than Monroe County, because they had an urban district and one suburban district. So they were combining 2 districts. Monroe County would be combining 19. And even Mark Hare, the other folks who've been sort of studying this issue, who've been on this program, they understand that it's almost certainly not going to happen that way here. The question is, are there ways to emulate that success in smaller ways? I mean, in the coming weeks on this program, we're going to have a conversation about what we call the pie slice idea. Bill mm-hmm. Callis talked about that, and some people think it's great, some people roll their eyes, I don't know, but the notion is, do we essentially disband the city school district, slice it up into 18 components and hand them to the other suburban districts? Ed?
We have 3 choices, basically, when it comes to the issue of education. One is we continue to accept the situation. It can be improved marginally, but it's not going to be improved dramatically if we do nothing. 2, we can take the approach that says we need to create a broader school system, either through the sector approach or through a total metropolitan school system or something. Or the 3rd approach, which is the one we've talked about but haven't really committed to, is to really rebuild the city so that we are able to not have it be such a concentrated area of poverty, have it be an area where there's promise and hope and help do some of the things that many community leaders would like to see. So I've always proposed a 3-prong approach. Number 1 is to help bring people up out of poverty. We need to set a target for that. We need to provide opportunities for people who wish to live outside the city in our low income. And 3, we need to find a way of bringing back the city and improving neighborhoods so that they become viable, so that people will invest in the city and therefore invest in their schools. So 3 major approaches to it. We can choose bits and pieces of them even if we want, but we're not going to get there if we do nothing.
If we do nothing in regards to poverty and the concentration of poverty.
That's correct.
Essentially,
that's correct.
You're not going to move the... Well, let's go to a caller who has who's taught in the city, and that is Brenda in Brighton. Go ahead, Brenda.
Hi. Yes, I've taught in the city. I taught English for speakers of other languages and had kids from other countries and from the United States. One thing I feel is that the city schools don't get enough money, obviously, and that it should be the whole area that pools their money and puts it where it's needed. That's, I think, something like what the last speaker said. I also think that in the city school district, the kids need smaller classes. Their parents are often working at very low-paying jobs and are exhausted when they get home, and the kids need more of a family feeling at school. I have some other thoughts, but I can't think of them.
Well, but thanks for the call, Brenda. I'll let our panel react there. What do you think?
Well, what the data says is that the city school district is, on average, spending as much per student as the suburban schools, you know, give or take, but they're in the middle. So I think one of the questions is how is that money being spent? And based on the fact that 75% of the youth in school are in classrooms with 80% poverty or more, what would the delta be needed for money to be invested, and then what would it be used for? Because again, we're about seeing improvements and change, so we'd have to really look at that. I think the caller makes a good point.
I think the caller does make a good point, and you know, sometimes when I have made points and pointed to studies that show that learning does not happen very effectively once you get to 40, 50, 60% poverty levels, people have come back and they said, well, that's based on the way we currently teach, and that's a valid point. So the caller says we should reduce class sizes. Well, that might not be a bad idea. I mean, maybe there is another option. Maybe we could cut classroom sizes in half and be more effective. Now you're talking about, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars a year. So the question becomes, you know, this is not something that you can affect by some small marginal increase in spending in city schools. So is that the way to go, or is deconcentrating our poverty the way to go? Deconcentrating the poverty is certainly, from an economic standpoint, the most intelligent thing the community can do, and it can be done in a way that does not hurt anybody.
Interestingly, this conversation, based on where the callers are taking it, has moved us more towards education, which I think is appropriate and understandable. But we're talking about poverty in general in Rochester. The new report from the Rochester Area Community Foundation and ACT Rochester finds that especially among cities of similar size, Rochester is really struggling when it comes to extreme poverty, concentration of poverty, kids growing up in poverty. More than half of Rochester kids, just over half, growing up in poverty. Ed Doherty is the author of the report. Ann Johnson is the director of ACT Rochester. They're in studio. We're going to get to your calls in a second. There's something that kind of caught my eye here, because when we talk about education, we talk about this idea of community schools. And again, we're almost certainly not going to end up following Wake County's lead from 3-4 decades ago for a number of reasons. But there on the list of similar sized cities is Raleigh. And when you look at, there's 18 cities that are roughly the same size in Ed and the group that put together this report. 18 cities roughly the same size. Rochester has the second highest poverty rate of 32.9%, only behind Hartford, 33.6%. The midpoint of that range is down at 23%, so Rochester's 10% higher. And at the bottom is Honolulu, 12%, but outside of Honolulu in the mainland United States, the lowest in that range is Raleigh, 16.2%, less than half the poverty rate of Rochester. Ed, do you see a correlation in Raleigh, North Carolina, having half the poverty rate of Rochester and having a metro school, community-wide school district approach?
Yes, I do. It's not just by having a metro school system.
Right, right. That, I'm not saying perfect cause and effect, but is there a relationship?
But generally, there, if you look at communities that have made some decision to address the issue of concentration of poverty through some kind of metropolitan approach or some kind of dramatic new fiscal approach. Those are the communities that have made progress. And, you know, we have done none of those in Rochester, and we're really being left behind. There's a variety of different strategies. You know, a place like Minneapolis and St. Paul used a revenue-sharing approach and didn't change government boundaries. A place like Indianapolis, they developed very wide boundaries. A place like Portland, Oregon, developed growth incentives and disincentives to try to control sprawl. There are strategies, and you don't have to take one single one. It doesn't have to be the Raleigh one. But it's time for us to stop doing nothing.
Let's get Tom in Fairport, who also taught in the city and is retired. Go ahead, Tom.
Good morning. Good conversation. Again, having taught in the city for 23 years, there's been enough. There's so much data out there. We're all spewing it left and right. The bottom line is poverty affects education. Why can't we invest monies into urban environments with more social workers, more school psychologists to help deal with the dysfunctional behaviors at times, with the opportunity for empowerment of children, and involve parents, single and two-parent households, to get into some of these programs to help them realize the only way out of poverty is either the lottery, which you're not going to get, or success in becoming intellectually stimulated, perhaps, or becoming a skilled worker in our society. It doesn't have to be a two-year school, a two-year college. It can be people who come into the schools, who have offices right in the schools to provide counseling, group counseling, career development skills, bring in the parents as well. We're missing the boat here, and it's not going to change. I don't think the suburb parents and households and educators are going to say, oh, yeah, let's combine those districts. I don't see that happening. That's a pie-in-the-sky thought, in my opinion. So, I mean, that's where I'm at. I grew up in the city of Rochester. I'm proud to say that I work here. I love it here. I love the people. And there are some wonderful, wonderful, wonderful families that are helping make it work in the city, but not enough. So we need to help. Let's get more agencies in the buildings. Let's get the parents to come into the schools, require them. Hell, lock in some of the, what I call those entitlement programs. Lock it in. If we're going to help families, and I have no problems helping families with my tax dollars, none at all. Let's get these families into compulsory family learning centers. You provide them with books, provide them with ways to empower these young kids to be high achievers, to feel good about themselves, to contribute. And I can go on and on, but I hope you hear my passion.
We do, loud and clear. Tom, thanks for the call, and there's no questioning his passion. What do our panelists think?
Well, I think that it's an interesting suggestion, and as I look back at how you really internalize change, seeing, speaking, and experiencing. Experiencing, of course, having the biggest impact. So an experience of seeing that there are other types of lives and other opportunities by being with people who aren't likewise in poverty is probably the most impactful versus bringing people into the school and sharing with them what they should know or need to know because that's going to be a much bigger leap.
Ed?
Well, I like a lot of the suggestions. I think that we need a plan. I mean, when I go and I make presentations, as I said, I've made 40 or 50 presentations around the community. There's lots of people that have the right idea. The urge for a silver bullet is very strong out there. But that's not going to work. What's going to work is long-term transformation. And that starts with a plan. We need some kind of a plan. We need a community plan that says, all right, we're going to deal with a third of the problem this way, a third this way, a third that way, and then put people like Tom to work in developing the very specific kinds of solutions that can work.
Go ahead.
that plan is something that we really need to have in this community.
Well, there's no question that there is a great surge in interest. Every phone line is still filled up with people who want to weigh in. You're hearing it, as you said, Ed, in the desire for presentations on this poverty report. Let's take a 60-second break. We're coming back with not only more calls, but I think Ann makes an important point as well as we evaluate this report, which is that the way forward also involves bringing in the poor themselves and asking them about their experiences and finding out more about life and poverty in Rochester. Rochester, fifth in the country among the top 75 metro areas when it comes to poverty, 32.9% poverty rate. But when it comes to cities of similar size, Rochester is second highest, behind only Hartford. And if you look at the list, it doesn't... there are reasons to think that this can change, whether it's Louisville, Oklahoma City, Albuquerque, Raleigh, Salt Lake City, Tulsa, in the teens. You think we can't get there? We can, but we're working on that this hour. Your phone calls next on member-supported public radio. Coming up in our second hour, what is the value of satire? What is the value of political cartoons? We sit down with a cartoonist from Western New York for his thoughts on what happened in the Charlie Hebdo tragedy. And we'll talk to a woman who has collected and studied political cartoons for decades. What are some of the most powerful cartoons throughout history? Join the conversation next hour on Connections.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Rochester Area Vegan Society, presenting a six-week course for credit in plant-based nutrition for physicians and open to the general public. Classes start Tuesday, January 20th at Unity Hospital Education Center. Register at rochesterveg.org.
Welcome back to Connections. The newest report from the Rochester Area Community Foundation and ACT Rochester indicates that what you probably suspected about poverty in Rochester might be even worse. We have a very high concentration of poverty and extreme poverty. 32.9% poverty rate, but roughly half of that is extreme poverty. And that is really troubling if you want to talk about a city that's trying to move forward. Ann Johnson, real briefly, there's an event coming up on Thursday. It's the 2015 Rochester Fair Housing Forums from 2 to 4 or 6 to 8, and they are open to the public. I know they're sponsored by the City of Rochester. What's the possible impact? What's going to be kind of the focus on these kind of
events? Well, for the first time in many years, the city is updating their report on impediments to affordable housing. So this is an opportunity to hear what we've put together data-wise as to how Rochester stands as far as affordable housing. Ed mentioned that most of the rental properties are in the city of Rochester. But it's an opportunity to give input on what people want to see as actions to improve our housing. And in this case, while it's the city's presentation that's going to the federal government, the county representatives are participating with us and updating theirs at the same time. So it's a great time to have a good conversation on housing.
Rochester Central Library, the Kate Gleason Auditorium. That's 2 to 4 and 6 to 8 on Thursday, and it's open to the public. Dan wants to talk about welfare models. Go ahead, Dan.
I believe in the context of, first of all, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
In the context of addressing poverty, I think we need to look at, isn't unique. I mean, this is happening all over the country. It's really happening all over the world. We will look at what is essentially an antiquated welfare model based on perceptions of what is work and what is, you know, what's a job. And we need to look at a basic income model that provides everybody, essentially, levels of playing field, provides everybody a level footing in a new economy where, you know, we don't know where the next job is coming from. I'll go ahead and take your, you know, comments off the air, but I think basic income is an issue, yeah, rather than welfare.
Yeah, Dan, thanks for the call. Thoughts on welfare models? Any agreement, disagreement? Ed Doherty?
Well, I think that there have been some studies that show the approach that the caller was talking about to be effective. You know, it's interesting. I mean, as much as we've studied this problem, as much as we've looked at the data, we actually don't understand it that very well. So a solution that may work for part of the poor population may not work for another part of it. So number one, we've got to understand our poverty situation much better than we do. There are some people that understand bits and pieces of it very well, but we don't have a good shared knowledge of what it's about. Every time I talk to somebody who has a solution, they have a single image of that poor person in their mind for whom that solution works. But the truth is the data makes it clear that it's a complex problem. For example, we have the highest percentage of disabled people who are in poverty as a percent of total population in Rochester among those cities. I don't know what models work best with that group. We need some different models there. It's not a one-size-fits-all. So, again, I tend to think that we need to take the approach. Number one, we're not afraid of the solutions. Number two, we're willing to come up with a big plan. And then number three, we'll mobilize the community to come in and start working on the real specifics that can be effective.
And when it comes to, again, some of those specific prongs that Ed has studied and helped write in this report, Rochester's poverty rate for females, families headed by females, female heads of households, is the highest among the benchmark group of cities, essentially the cities that are the same size as Rochester. We have the worst situation when it comes to poverty among female heads of households. I assume, Ed and Ann, that most of the female heads of households are single females, no? Mm-hmm.
Well, no husband there okay. is the definition.
Okay, right. So,
and the Census Bureau does track male-headed households as well, so mm-hmm. the data is there, but that's such a small number that it frankly does not warrant
single-parent dads raising.
Yes. But there are some, and there are issues there too, to be sure.
Okay, and so when I think about single parents to begin with, I mean, I have one child mm-hmm. and an amazing wife, and I know how difficult certain days can be. Try to imagine someone living in poverty as a single parent. It is mind-blowing to me mm-hmm. that. That I don't even know how to describe it, that they're going to try to get out of poverty to build a good life for their kids. What does it tell us that Rochester's got the most harrowing situation for, essentially, single moms? What does that help us focus more of the problem on?
Well, I don't think it gives us a silver bullet, but it right. provides us an opportunity to look both at long-term and short-term solutions. What are supports that we're providing to a single mom that may be above and beyond those that we're providing to a family? And then also, our teen pregnancy rate is one of the largest in the country for a city. So again, are we educating our youth as to the challenges mm-hmm. that single motherhood can provide. So it's multiple things. Again, to Ed's point, what's the plan?
Let me get back to the phones, and I think we have Paul in Rochester. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, good afternoon. There's so many parts of this conversation, it's almost impossible to pick one to choose.
Yeah.
I mean, most recent, the single adult mother, the training of young people and responsibility. To be very blunt and put it in a delicate way, in the heat of passion, do you really think they care about education and all this? It's only 9 months later when the poor child is born. No father, which unfortunately for the woman, he's generally able to walk away easier. I've even had instances where the father has actually lived maybe a few doors down the street because the mother can get much more help and assistance if she's by herself. There is too many problems with this. In terms of education went out when we started reducing what would be considered what a child should learn in school, ranging from simple math and English and so forth. This is no longer taught. In terms of occupation, Rochester in the 60s, early 60s, had a massive exit of people just moving, not only the suburbs, but everywhere. At that time, if you weren't, they were limited education, and so forth, you could go to Gerber Baby Food, sit in an assembly line, and put baby jar lids on a jar and be paid and have an income. There was many, many, many of these factories, ranging from medical equipment right on through, that hired people. These type of companies are not coming back to Rochester. Now you can say, we need jobs. Yes, we sure do need jobs, but what type of jobs do we need? what would be the education and training for these?
Well, Paul, thanks for the call, and I want to piggyback Paul's call with a comment we just got from another listener online, and then we'll kick it over to our panelists to respond, because there's a lot there from Paul, but he finished on the jobs point. Another listener writes, poverty and education go hand in hand, but none of this means anything if these concentrated regions have no access to jobs. It's a nice idea to diffuse poverty, but without a partnership with businesses, nothing will change.
We have tremendous economic challenges. There's no question that the decade of 2000 to 2010 we saw a tremendous surge in poverty. And I think that part of the reason for that was the loss of manufacturing jobs. People who were previously able to have skilled jobs taking non-skilled jobs, and the poor kind of falling out at the bottom. It appears that was taking place. So yes, we need jobs. We need lots of jobs in this community. We need an economic resurgence of jobs all up and down the range. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things I found is that we rank second among the comparable cities in the poverty rate of college graduates, which is an interesting phenomenon.
Wow.
So, you know, it's too easy to think that this is a simple thing. Yes, we need jobs, and we need a lot of jobs. But what's going to create business interest in Rochester? The kind of poverty rates we have? A community that chooses to do nothing about it? Who would want to invest there? So we do need to see this as an issue for regional economic prosperity.
For our listeners who might have just been joining us in the last few minutes, Ed Doherty is the author of this report, the new report on poverty, put out by ACT Rochester and the Rochester Area Community Foundation. And Ed keeps returning to this idea that there are a lot of prongs here, but essentially they start with whether we accept a concentration of poverty, the likes of which Rochester has, or whether we don't. And Rochester has a more concentrated community of poverty. And Ed is saying that in many ways, it has been a choice, that the community's accepted this. But we have some people online saying, okay, you may put the kind of housing situations elsewhere, but folks who live around there may choose to move. It may be mm-hmm. a shell game. I mean, have we thought about we keep coming back to how do we fix that concentration of poverty?
Again, you gotta attack it on all fronts. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we need to elevate people out of poverty. That needs to be a part of it. I've been proposing something I call the 10-10-10 plan, which is 10,000 people moved out of poverty, finding the tools and the techniques and the strategies necessary, providing opportunities for 10,000 low-income people who want to live in the suburbs to be able to do that, and attracting to the city 10,000 middle-class families. Now, if you take any one of these strategies, they seem impossible, but they would have a wonderful synergy among themselves if they are put in place as a coordinated strategy. And so I think that, and is this going to happen in 5 years? Of course not. This is going to take 20 years. But are we starting today?
And as a part of that solution, we need to be sure that we move away from the typical silo structure. So as we look at solutions for these, how do we help with the engagement of someone who is moving out of poverty is linked with someone who may have a job and has made the investment to be able to be successful in that job? In Syracuse, there's a program called Choosing to Thrive. They actually have a program for taking people out of poverty, but then some of those leaders sit on a guiding coalition, which is a combination of community leaders and people who experience poverty. And so we talked about how do you engage those people who have the experience and the answers. And Jane mentioned earlier that we have all these commissions of people who are the haves. We've got to think about doing things differently as we're going to address these problems and take some risk in the process.
When it comes to what holds people back, Sue, who's on the line with us, says literacy is a huge barrier. Go ahead, Sue. Sue, are you there? Hi, Sue. We don't have Sue. She wanted to talk about literacy. And frankly, on Friday, the president and the White House rolled out the plan of 2 years of free community college, which I think a lot of people felt good about, but The question is, if you're not reading by third grade, what chance do you have?
And our students are not reading by third grade. You know, we have about 20-22% using the high level data that came out. There's been some data that shows it as low as 5% and 6%. So we simply have got to address this issue of literacy, not as something that we add on at the end of the school process, but something that our students are learning to read while they're in school. And we are so far behind on that, that we've got to address it. Doing it without addressing poverty seems impossible to me.
Let me try to move quickly through the calls, and we're not going to get to everybody because this community is interested in poverty. But if I'm coming to you, let's try to keep it packaged and quick. Mike, go ahead.
Oh, I am?
Go ahead, Mike.
My basic premise, though, I'm looking at this as we keep looking for government for answers, we look for government for answers, but government's the reason there aren't any answers, because government costs too much money, and there's no business going to start up in New York, unless they're so well-funded, they're already rich. A small business owner has so many regulatory fees and cost structures that makes it impossible for someone that even was literate to start a business, to create jobs. Until you start looking at the overall structure, we're top-heavy. Everything costs too much to do because government's imposing programs and structures on people that are just frivolously wasteful.
Mike, thank you for the call. Thoughts, Adnan?
Well, the biggest government function, the largest government spending, is on public education, and we are not spending it well. Our return on investment is awful. So while the question of whether we should be spending more is a good question, some people think we should spend more, some think we should spend less. But I think everybody would agree that we got to start spending what we're spending in a way that's effective, and we are causing this problem.
Wow, every single line. John, Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. You know, we have the wealthiest poor in New York State in the country, in that we take care of our poor very well. And I think what the focus has to be, number one, if you look at the governmental issues that cause problems, I'm not a Republican, but maybe if more Republicans would get elected in some of these urban areas, we wouldn't have this problem. The other thing is we need to make these education unions, who act like mobs at some time, we've got to make right-to-work rules in this state to diffuse the public union strength, because they have hijacked the system. And finally, we need to institute vouchers and competition into the education system.
All right, John, thanks for the call. Are our poor living better than most poor around the country? Ed, you've done some study.
Well, you know, the welfare system has undergone tremendous change since the 1990s. Most welfare benefits are temporary and very inadequate. Does New York State do a better job than other states? Of course it does. But there are many, many poor who are receiving no benefit. So it's a real mixed bag. There is no single way. I tried to study it in this study to analyze how you could build welfare benefits into this analysis. It's all over the map.
Jim in Geneva. Jim, thanks for calling. Let's try to keep it moving. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to suggest to Ed and others that one model to look at is the collective impact model that came out of Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So they faced many of the same struggles. And I teach at Hobart Lane Smith College this year in Geneva, New York. And our president's been leading the effort that brings together business leaders, nonprofits, higher ed organizations, all around trying to make a difference in the school. So we've identified three focuses: literacy, college and career readiness, and graduation rate. And basically, rather than coming up with a plan first, it's let's figure out how do we address those goals and how do we move the needle on those things. And as a result, we've seen an endless number of organizations stepping up to the plate and doing things that contribute to the school, because waiting for a plan and waiting to identify specific things that need to be done just doesn't do it in a context such as, especially in a school district as big as Rochester. We're fortunate in Geneva where we have the same similar problems and a very similar demographic, but it's small enough where we can make change fairly quickly. And I'll take my comments on the air.
Jim, thanks for the call.
That is the STRIVE model. The STRIVE model has shown some good success, and it has been adopted by Rock the Future, Rochester's initiative to improve education. It's definitely built on the collective impact model, and it's only a few years old, and it's going to take some time. but it is not going to change the poverty realities in the city. It may well help improve some of the supports and other ways that we can improve education.
All right, real briefly, Scott on Twitter says, great topic. Please ask your guests, what is one thing achievable in 1 year that we as a community should do to start addressing this? Again, it's easy to come. It's not easy to come up with one thing in 1 year, but...
The only thing I would suggest that we try to do in 1 year is to take steps that will help us in 15 years. I think that we spend far too much of our time answering that question, what can we do in 1 year? I've been around for 30-something years, 40 years, trying to answer that question. We've not made much progress. So the one thing I would do is start building the long-term solutions.
But there is a pressure on political leaders sometimes to show short-term results, and I think, frankly, the media needs to mature in the way we cover it too, right? I mean, I think understanding short-term benchmarks, reporting on them aggressively is fair, but it's also fair to look at the macro and say, this kind of a poverty rate doesn't change in a year or three.
So can we do them both simultaneously?
Well, I think that's part of the question. We have so much more to talk about, and I'm out of time for the hour, but the good news is Ed and Ann are so generous with their time, and I want to thank you for taking this hour, and I hope that you'll come back and continue this discussion.
Certainly.
Anytime. Thank you, Evan.
And Ann, where can people find the Poverty Report one more time?
On actrochester.org.
Do it, go read it, and let's all start thinking of solutions together. We're right back on Member-Supported Public Radio.